This week we will be studying Psalm 12. It is a short psalm of David which bemoans the dishonesty of the people generally and also their willingness to trample the poor. David calls on God to defend against these wicked and expresses his confidence that God will do so. Herein we have a reminder that God abhors dishonesty. He doesn't want people using dishonesty, not to take advantage of others, nor to flatter their way into positions of power. Particularly, God does not want the powerful to oppress the poor. Eventually, he will rise to defend the rights of the weak. Your passage then is Psalm 12, and if you have not read it yet, I recommend that you pause and do so now. If you have been following along chronologically, you know that we just finished our study in the book of Amos. In that book, Amos denounced the northern kingdom of Israel primarily because of the abuse of the poor by the powerful. He cursed them to exile. This psalm, which contemplates similar problems in a different generation, seemed to me to be a good thematic match with that book. The heading says that this psalm was written by David, who lived and reigned and wrote this psalm roughly 240 years before Amos wrote. We studied David in the books of 1 Samuel, 2 Samuel, and 1 Chronicles back in 2021 and 2022. We studied many psalms as they corresponded to the life of David, but David wrote most of the psalms, so we still have more than 40 of them to study, and I expect we'll still be dipping into his work all the way through the New Testament. He addressed the psalm to the choir master, apparently so that the psalm could be sung in public worship. I note a significant difference between the textual content of this psalm and that of many modern worship songs, which certainly tend not to emphasize punishment for sin. The heading says that this verse is according to the Sheminith. That word Sheminith appears only 3 times in Scripture, here in the heading of Psalm 6 and in 1 Chronicles 15:21, which says that the musicians played, quote, with harps on the Sheminith, end quote. The exact meaning is perhaps open to dispute. The ESV provides the vague footnote that this is probably a musical or liturgical term. Gesenius, according to Blue Letter Bible, gives a much more specific definition. He says confidently, and I think correctly, that the word means most literally eighth. He says that this describes the octave, in music a word denoting the lowest and gravest notes sung by men's voices. So, to put it into modern musical terms, play this one down, an octave lower. As a musician, I find this to be particularly interesting because, aside from instrumentation, we have very little information in the Bible about what any of the music actually sounded like. But if, and it is an if, David is here describing an octave, that would strongly imply that David was playing his music in some mode of the diatonic scale, which is very exciting news for me. I had supposed that he might have played on a pentatonic scale, for example. If the musicians were playing their harps in the lower octave, this would also imply that they had harps with multiple octaves, 16 strings or more, and not just smaller instruments. My own harp has 26 strings. So maybe David played one just like it. The psalm opens with an invocation to Jehovah that he should save. From what did the people of God need to be saved? Not from external invaders, but from themselves. Among them, none were found who were truly upright in character. The godly were gone, and the faithful had vanished. In verse 2, David cites the dishonesty of the people as an example of this. He said that everyone speaks lies. I note here that there are many kinds of lies. Sometimes people lie to steal something, that's theft by deception. Sometimes they lie on their resumes to make themselves look good. Sometimes they lie about what happened at the scene of the crime to get out of trouble. David here cites the seemingly more innocent lie of flattery. Literally, smooth talk. Flattery is an essential component of an immature society which cannot handle the truth. Immature people need their egos fluffed. They respond with anger to criticism. They only perform their duties when people are nice to them. They supplant righteousness with politeness. We discussed in our study of Proverbs, see our message, The Wisdom of Honesty, published June 11th of 2023, that while honesty can hurt, it is better to have honesty than just nice words that are dishonest. Here again, David decries the overly polite who are afraid to tell it like it is and who instead tell people what they want to hear. David did not want the yes-men around him. However, exactly how people were flattering is unclear. It is evident from verse 5 that in some way this dishonesty had resulted in a plundering of the poor. David is also opposed, see verse 3, to those who make great boasts, speaking better of themselves than the truth would allow. With their lies, see verse 4, A certain class of people expected that they would avoid trouble. They hoped that they could lie to rise through the political ranks, such that they should have no master. They sought to be unaccountable for their actions by their words. David didn't want those liars hanging around. He wanted honest people who would prevail by their good deeds, not by their great boasts. David cried out to God, asking that these flattering lips and boastful tongues should be cut off. In verse 5, Jehovah states his intent to intervene. Because the deceit of the wicked had caused the suffering of the poor and needy, Jehovah would intervene for their protection. Jehovah is here contrasted against the wicked. He does not flatter. He doesn't concern himself with niceties. He doesn't speak more highly of himself than he is. And how could he, since there is nothing higher? Jehovah needs nothing from man that he might need to trick us to get it. We can take nothing from him that he might need to deceive to keep it. God has no reason to lie, and there is no lie in him. His words are like the purest silver, not refined just once, but refined 7 times. The people of God would be surrounded by evil men on every side, but Jehovah would protect the poor from a wicked generation. Before we move on to application, I think that we should note quickly that the Bible is not here endorsing the myth of noble poverty. There is a romantic trope, often retold in books and movies and so forth, in which the hero is a poor person who is inevitably mistreated by the wealthy. He is noble and moral and inherently good, while those who have acquired wealth are inherently wicked and bad. Well, while that makes for good storytelling and may often be true, there is not a direct correlation between moral character and wealth. Poor people are sometimes good people and sometimes bad people. Rich people are sometimes good and sometimes bad. Good people can be rich or poor, and bad people can be rich or poor. In fact, the reality is often the opposite of the myth of noble poverty. Often poor people are lazy people who don't earn wealth, or stupid people who make bad financial decisions, or wicked people who squander their wealth on worthless things, while rich people are often smart people who make good decisions, hard-working people who earn wealth, and good people who put their wealth to work on productive and valuable things. Proverbs talks a lot about that. See our messages from July 2023 on that topic. So when the Bible talks about the rich taking advantage of the poor, it isn't necessarily saying that rich is bad and poor is good. It is more saying that it is bad to use a power imbalance to take advantage of people. That said, there are those instances in which people become rich by wicked means, and there are many such means. The drug kingpin and the human trafficker would not ply their trades unless they could make money off of them. There are swindlers and thieves, there are corporate bigwigs who take advantage of workers, there are bureaucrats who suck up tax dollars by force and then provide little or nothing of value. There are party boys who inherit money from daddy. Wealth does not in itself make a person good any more than the lack of it makes a person bad. In application, let us first remember that God is true. God is the creator. He is the all-knowing. He is the standard by which all things are measured, and he defines what is true. By definition, God is right. To lie is against his nature and his character. Numbers 23:19 says, God is not man that he should lie, or a son of man that he should change his mind. Has he said, and will he not do it? Or has he spoken, and will he not fulfill it? God doesn't lie, and he doesn't want his people to lie. I won't go in depth on this, because we've discussed it before, but scriptures generally prohibit dishonesty. We are not to bear false witness by making dishonest accusations, see Exodus 20:16. Nor should we swear oaths and not fulfill them, nor enrich ourselves by deceiving others. Leviticus 19:11-12 says, You shall not steal. You shall not deal falsely. You shall not lie to one another. You shall not swear by my name falsely, and so profane the name of your God. I am the Lord. And of course, I've already mentioned that honesty is a major topic of discussion in the Proverbs. In the overwhelming majority of cases, then, honesty is the best policy. That does not mean, however, that it is never acceptable to lie. There are many sins which, given the right circumstances, are justifiable. It is a grave sin to kill a man, but even killing is justifiable at times. One might rightly kill as a means of punishing some other worse sin, or in an act of self-defense. Lying, then, while generally wrong, is significantly less weighty than killing, and like killing, there are certain circumstances which justify it. We note, for example, Rahab's lie to hide the spies in Joshua 2. That dishonesty committed to protect the righteous from the unrighteous in that context of war was justifiable. However, such cases as those should be the rare exception and not the rule. Today's passage makes clear that telling so-called little white lies to flatter others and ingratiate oneself are not pleasing to God, and certainly lies told to take advantage of others are not. And in conjunction with that, God does not want us to take advantage of the poor. In today's passage, God said that he would respond because the poor were plundered. Generally speaking, we would prefer to show compassion for the poor. We would prefer to help them and to lift them out of their poverty when possible. However, I do want to be careful with the context here. Today's passage doesn't so much promote charity as it does prohibit taking advantage. It is often true that the rich get richer and the poor get poorer. A rich person has something to invest. He can use his money to make more money. The poor man has nothing to invest. He struggles to get by. Sometimes he has struggles that could be avoided if only he had more money. Homeownership is one example. If you have your house paid off, it generally gains value every year. But if you don't own a house, you burn money on rent. The landlord gets richer, the renter gets poorer, even if the landlord is doing nothing valuable and creating no new wealth. The scriptures frown on such arrangements. Take the charging of interest. That's an arrangement where the lender who has money makes more money simply because he has money to lend, and the borrower who borrows money gets poorer paying interest simply because he has no money and must borrow. That is not good. We don't want the rich to plunder the poor. We don't want people to get richer just because they are rich, and we don't want the poor to get poorer just because they are poor. We want people to get richer based on the value that they provide to the world through worthwhile work. We had several sermons on this topic when we discussed the wisdom of work and wealth in the book of Proverbs back in July of 2023. So if you want a thorough discussion on the topic, I recommend that you look there. But certainly, God does not want the wealthy and powerful abusing the poor by using deception, as today's psalm demonstrates. So don't do that. God will defend the weak against the strong. He is the source of morality. He is the judge of right and wrong. He is the defender of the rights of the weak. To conclude, Psalm 12 is a psalm of David in which he describes his frustration with evildoers who used deception to gain favor for themselves and called for God to rescue from them. God responded. When deception was used to plunder the poor, God was their deliverer. He is a God of truth and an opponent of lies. And so we also learn to deal honestly, not to take advantage of those weaker than ourselves, and to trust in God to deliver us in our weakness. For those of you who are listening to this message away from your computer and are looking for more like it, you can find us at eastjordan.church.